We're talking about impact. We're talking about the change being created by your program. So what change is occurring over a certain amount of time? In other words, what difference are your programs creating in people's lives, in animals' lives, in your local community? Where were they at before they started your program, and where are they at midway through or at the end of your program? Welcome to the Social Impact Solutions Podcast, where we help mission-driven leaders measure and market their social impact so they can raise more money and do more good. I'm Lauren.
And I'm John Mark. Together, we bring you expert insights, practical strategies, and real-world stories to help you create more meaningful and measurable change. This podcast is designed for purpose-driven leaders. So let's dive in, explore what's possible, and take your mission to the next level. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Social Impact Solutions Podcast. I am here with my co-founder, Dr. Lauren Vanderpool, and we are so excited to get to talk to you about a webinar that we just hosted called Year-End Funding That Works, How Communicating Impact Inspires Giving. So this is not going to be a recap of the webinar if you were there. This is going to be some of the highlights and some of a more of a deeper dive into the conversation that was had. And we can talk about some practical takeaways as well. But Lauren, how are you doing today? Thrilled to be here with you.
Great. I'm excited for today's conversation.
Awesome. Awesome. So if you missed the webinar, I want you to understand, you know, where we are. We're recording this on November 21st. End of year is right around the corner, and the lion's share of all gifts on average, if you look on the average nonprofit in the United States, the lion's share of funding comes in Q4, but especially in the month of December, and a lot of that trickles into early January of 2026. And so what we talked about was how you can communicate most effectively to your funders in order for them to understand the change that your organization creates, the urgency around the change that you create, and how those donors can take action. The first thing that we talked about, I think is really important to really digest, is communicating the size of the problem that your organization attempts to solve. Lauren, would you zoom in on that and just help people understand what that means and why it's so important?
Sure. And just to reiterate, we recently did a webinar, talked about this with slides. If you missed that, you can probably find that on YouTube or reach out to our team. But just wanting to hit the high points here in the podcast as well. So we talk about this a lot, the size of the problem that an organization solves. It definitely helps build a strong case for support. But the reason that we talk about this so much is that organizations, not always, but often we see nonprofits that really, they use a lot of their marketing communication efforts to talk about what they do or to talk about their programs, to talk about, quote unquote, the solutions that they provide. But that means that they're assuming that the listener, the reader, the audience knows how important the problem is. And unfortunately, but oftentimes people that are even close to your mission, care about your mission, may not have any idea how large or how relevant or how urgent the problem is that your mission aims to solve. That can be a lot of different things. I had a conversation yesterday with someone from an organization who focuses on SIDS or sudden infant death syndrome. It's a very sad, tragic situation. Their organization is doing amazing work. But that is the number one reason of child deaths in the United States. And so, you know, a lot of people don't know that. So stating the size of that problem, that it's a very large percentage, it's the overwhelming majority of accidental and child deaths. So I know that's a heavy topic, but that problem really matters. And it's very important for them to communicate that in order for people to understand, not the urgency as much in this situation. I think we all understand the urgency there. But, you know, if we do something about that, we're affecting the majority of these tragedies every year across the U.S. What other examples would you have for that, John Mark, with the importance of and how to state the size of the problem that an organization is solving?
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. And I think something just to zoom in on a little bit more for people to understand is like, you're so close to the problem that your organization solves that it's easy to forget that not everyone knows about it, right? And that's a very, very common problem. And when we when we articulate, when we clearly articulate the size of the problem that we solve, it helps people understand why they should care, right? Because all organizations in some way, shape, or form are trying to solve a problem. When we speak to it appropriately, and when we speak to it with regard to, you know, quantifying the size of the problem, which is sort of the next level there, it helps people understand, oh my goodness, this is something I should probably care about. And that's how we begin the conversation. That's how we really tell amazing nonprofit stories. But most importantly, that's how we go out and solve big problems. We have to articulate the size of the problem. And so when we think about it, how do we quantify the size of the problem? And I don't know what the rate of SIDS is in the United States. Lauren, did y'all have a chance to talk about that on the call?
We didn't, but I think just based on what we talked about, it's well north of 60% of all child deaths in the U.S. On an annual basis. So it's a large majority based on our conversation. I haven't fully fact checked that, but that's just, you know, a good example for this point.
I think it's a good conversation to have on, like, 60% of child deaths. You know, is it under the age of 5, I would imagine, or what does that look like?
SIDS is typically under the age of 1, but...
The age of 1. Okay, good deal. That's why you're the doctor in public health and not me. So under the age of 1 on that. Then what we would want to say is, like, okay, well, how many child deaths occur each year? And that's how we get into the, in the United States. If you're a U.S.-based organization, if you are a global organization, we would take that even further. And that's really, you know, from a business perspective, that's called, like, your total available market, right? That's what we're, it's your TAM. That's what we're looking at, is we want to quantify the size of the problem. Now, we could take it further and talk about the social cost of that problem. We could look at what do child mortality rates, what kind of impact does it have, negative impact on communities? You know, what does that cost? What is the cost to the family? And I really do mean dollars and cents. And I know that might be sound a little bit cold because this is such a traumatic experience for so many families. And that's absolutely a part of the conversation. But when we want to quantify the size of the problem, it can be really helpful to put things in a format that anyone can understand. That's why the size of the problem is so important. It helps people know what they need to pay attention to. And it also begins the conversation around, why should I become a funder, or why should I leave my corporate job to come work at your nonprofit, right? Everybody wants to make a difference. The number one reason why donors give is to make an impact. And they won't understand what the impact is until they understand what the problem is, what the impact could be until they understand what the problem is. But I really, this is something I could spend, you know, hours talking about because I think it's so important. But I'd love to know if you have any closing thoughts on that, Lauren.
Yeah, I mean, we're wanting to keep this conversation more specific to end of year. And so, again, when people are inundated with appeals and asks and donor requests, it's not necessarily a way to compete, but to be really clear, to help people understand that we're not just asking for money to meet this year's budget, but we're trying to expand and hopefully expand and grow into 2026 and beyond, because this is a really large issue that's persisting and we're proud of the progress that we've made. But helping people to understand, again, the size of the problem, how it affects your local community or local communities, even if it's an international effort, and just giving them very clear steps as to how they can get involved now, but also giving them a larger vision as to the change that you're wanting to create, the change that needs to occur to solve this larger problem. In other words, the impact that is intended to be created over the next 1, 2, or 5 years. So it's a way to help people understand the real importance and how critical your mission is. It's also a great way to paint a picture and a vision and future goals for people to lean into and partner with and invest in, not just now, but into the coming months and years.
Right. I love that. Absolutely love that. So again, just recapping what Lauren was saying, like we're casting a vision for how big the problem is. What we can do now, what she was saying, is let's define, like, sort of your piece of the pie. So if we talk about the global rate of SIDS, obviously global being around the world, but let's say you only work in the United States. We can shrink that problem down to the US, and let's say you work in California. And so we're shrinking that down even further. What we then get to do is define the funding need. like Lauren said, we don't want to raise money for your budget, right? That's boring. No one cares, right? I don't care about your budget. No one cares about your budget other than you and a few other people. What we want to do is define the need to go solve our piece of the pie, our piece of the problem here. That can be a one-year goal. That can be a three-year goal. Nonprofits exist to go solve big problems that only nonprofits can solve. The types of problems that the government and businesses are not designed to solve, things that nonprofits can solve. And so this is where we can talk about the funding need or the gap, right? So again, just using the same analogy, California-based organization that works with people that you're experiencing since they're trying to prevent sudden infant death syndrome, what we can then say is, great, over the next 12 months, we need to distribute 500,000 Safe Sleep initiatives, whatever their programs are, right? That's how we can talk about the funding need. We need to distribute 500,000. Problem is, we only have funding for 300,000. So we have a gap. We have a 200,000 unit gap. This is where people can see themselves as a part of the solution. Here's the big problem. Here's where we're currently at. This is the gap that's missing. And I love this conversation because it's so tangible. It's so practical. And it gives everyone an opportunity to participate. But Lauren, I'd love to hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I don't know that I would agree that no one cares about your budget, but I think John Mark's point is that we see too many organizations that are really just trying to, scramble and get a bunch of small donations together in order to meet this month's budget or meet this year's budget. And if we don't, we're going to have to cut an employee. And sometimes that's reality. Sometimes that's the case and you can't do anything about it. Our point, though, is we see too many organizations that that's just how they function and that's how they've operated for too many years in a row. And so, I think John Mark's point in saying, no one cares about your budget is more so they care about the mission. They care about the change being created. And that's why we're so big on measuring your impact, communicating that impact, and helping donors, funders, other stakeholders see how they can partner with you to create change and really invest in your mission.
Mm-hmm.
And so highlighting the size of the problem then really helps carry over into communicating the funding need, right? If there are, I'm trying to think of another less heavy example, but if there are, 1,000, schools across your region or across your state that, people don't have adequate supplies, they don't have adequate education, and that's what your mission is about, is really improving education quality, access to education. Highlighting the size of that problem in order for people to understand, well, why do you need to raise $1.5 million? Why do you need to raise $500,000 or more or less? It just helps them really understand what the funds are needed for. And without getting too granular into budgets and line items, some individuals will ask for that, and that's fine. But making it clear that this is not just to keep the lights on this year. This is not just to pay salaries through 2025. Ideally, you're in a place where this is setting you up for success, whether it's your end of year campaign or a spring campaign that you're launching. This is setting you up for success, for growth, and not just to scrape by for the next few weeks or months.
So well put. That's so well put. And when we think about, these don't have to be mutually exclusive, right? Your budget being met and your impact goals being met can be one and the same, right? It's just, how are we framing what we're raising money for so that everyone can understand what change is being created and everyone can understand why it matters so much. And we really do want to lean into this other piece of the conversation is show the difference the funder's money is going to make, right? Reduce this down to where they can see every gift of $100 or $10,000, whatever increments that we're working in. Let's talk about where the money's going and why it matters, right? There's so much good work to be done. There's so much public funding that has dried up. There's a lot of gaps out there for organizations right now. And so it's the kind of thing where it's just, we're not just trying to stay afloat, like Lauren was talking about earlier. We're not trying to do that. We're trying to advance our cause. And for some of you, you've gotten your budgets completely slashed because of things that have gone politically and economically. And we totally hear you and we empathize with you because that's extraordinarily hard. Mm-hmm. But that does not mean that we cannot still keep the conversation focused on the change that's being created, right? It's a lot less about, you know, the longevity of your organization. It's a lot less about that than it is the impact that your organization can co-create with funders, employees, volunteers, et cetera, regardless of what's going on politically. And so that's a very fun conversation to have, right? This is what's really exciting. When we say, this is what we stand for, this is where we're going, this is the focus that we have, and here's how your contributions, your funding contributions, can make a difference. What are your thoughts on that one?
I think it's a great point, but as unsurprisingly, as per usual, it brings me back to the importance of impact measurement. Mm-hmm. So it's important and it's valuable to paint a picture for the impact that can be created in the future. But over time, say, you know, a volunteer, a donor, an employee, a corporate partner, another stakeholder of a different type, even policyholders, if they know about an organization, they've been involved with an organization for a period of months or years, at some point in time, you know, they will start to wonder or question if it's not clear, if it's not communicated, hey, I've given a lot of time, I've given a lot of money, I've invested a lot in this organization, but you know, I'm not real sure what change is actually occurring. So it just brings me back to the importance of impact measurement, impact evaluation, program evaluations, because we do see too many organizations that their intent is good. They are trying to really create change in the community, but it's not being measured at all, or at least not very effectively. And so it's very hard for them. It maybe is not even possible for some of these organizations to say, oh, we really have improved health outcomes. Right. By X percent, or we really have improved educational outcomes, you know, knowledge gain, graduation rates, college attendance rates, depending on what your mission is about. So yes, I agree. It's very important to highlight the size of the problem, the funding need, and how, you know, partnerships, investment, donors can really help create change in the future, but you have to have impact measurement practices, program evaluation practices in place in order to measure that and report that back to funders. Because I think we're all here to see some level of maybe not return on investment, but social return on investment, right? And so we want to see change. We don't just want to give our time to something that isn't really making a difference, or give our money to something that really isn't making a difference. And so that's a little bit of a caveat, but just something that I think is important to loop into the conversation as well.
I think it's something that we can always come back to, though. And I love your definition of like what impact is in its most basic sense. And so why don't we just talk about that? Why don't we just talk about what is impact and what are some of the most effective ways of actually measuring that, so we have something to report. So we have things that we can project. So we can have important goals and stretch goals and scale goals to go scale up impact in a meaningful way. Would you mind sharing more about that?
Sure. We say it a lot, and anyone that's been on a webinar with us or talked to our team, when we're talking about impact, we're talking about the change being created by your program. So what change is occurring over a certain amount of time? In other words, what difference are your programs creating in people's lives, in, you know, animals' lives, in your local community? Where were they at before they started your program, and where are they at midway through or at the end of your program? For, you know, arts and culture organizations, that's one that I think they feel like it's really hard to measure their impact. Mm-hmm. You know, you can measure knowledge gained, you can measure people's experiences, you can measure confidence and self-efficacy related to art and culture, you can measure feelings of happiness or feelings of joy. You can, over time, especially with like after school arts programs, you can start to see, you know, our students' grades shifting and changing after they are part of an arts program. Mm-hmm. Is there any behavior change? So there are lots of options, whether it's arts and culture, education, health and human services, or any of the other types of organizations that are out there. There's so much that can be measured, but ultimately what you're wanting to measure and what you're wanting to communicate is, this is how this person's life changed by going through our program, or this is how our community has changed over the course of the last 6 months, 12 months, 18 months because of our program. But I would love to hear your thoughts as well, John Mark.
It's just my favorite conversation. So obviously, Lauren and I started Social Impact Solutions. We just celebrated 8 years. And so we did it to help organizations measure the impact of their programs so they can market that impact, raise more money, and do more good, right? That's the cycle that we like helping organizations with. I know I said this a few moments ago, but there's nothing that drives giving more than the social impact your nonprofit creates. And so she said it so wonderfully, again, why she has a doctorate in public health and why she's able to help so many organizations with the impact measurement and the fundraising. It's what did their life look like before? What did their life look like after? Right. And we've got to be able to showcase that change, right? And we might look at that from a 1 month snapshot or a 5 year snapshot or longer, right? Before and after, pre post in that regard. What you want to do is to be able to clearly articulate that our programs create change repeatedly and successfully. The way that we know that is what Lauren was saying. We evaluate our programs. We are seeing the outcomes of our programs. We are looking at them. We see how efficient and effective we are at creating change. And then we translate that for fundraising, right? We take that data, we take those stories of transformation, and we take it to our fundraising efforts, right? Fundraising teams and presentations and grant applications and LOIs and, you know, social media pieces and video scripts and donor meetings and so many different ways that we communicate impact, so that we can create momentum in your fundraising. That's what it takes, though. Scaling impact is extremely expensive, right? It's very, very costly to scale the impact of a program. And what's wonderful is that donors are most aligned with your programmatic impact than they are with anything else. The problem is very few organizations are actually measuring their impact. We've done a lot of surveying of nonprofit leaders. We see, what are we at, 1,300 nonprofit leaders that we've surveyed at this point? Mm-hmm. Of the 1,300, 88% do not have basic impact measurement practices in place. 88%. It's a huge problem, right? That's a huge problem. But when we start just with the rudimentary approaches to how do we evaluate our programmatic effectiveness, how do we communicate that, we see organizations not only provide greater impact for their beneficiaries and program participants, we see them raise a lot more money. Some are like tripling in size in less than a year. Like, it's an amazing thing that can occur when we measure and market our impact, right? We raise more money so that we can do more good. And so obviously we're very, very invested in impact measurement and fundraising efforts, but it's absolutely a great path for organizations to take if they want to not just scale fundraising, but scale their impact as well.
Definitely. I do think it's 78% that don't have basic impact measurements in place. So just 78% don't have basic impact measurement in place. And then I think it's 88% don't have new recurring donors on a monthly or annual basis. And so lots of stats. And yes, we are all about helping nonprofits measure and communicate their impact so they can raise more money and do more good. And so communicating that impact back to funders is critically important. I don't think anyone would question that, but would also love to just interject that it's also critically important to report this back internally, right? Not just the successes, but also, you know, where are you kind of plateauing? Where are you not seeing change or improvement in your programs? And where might there be some negative consequences or results from your program? So looking at it holistically and seeing from your impact measurement efforts, where are some gaps in your programs? What can be improved upon? And letting donors and other stakeholders know about that too, that we've found these gaps. And so this is where some of our funding and efforts are going towards next year to improve our programs. It doesn't all have to be glowing results, right? Ideally, most organizations we work with have very successful impact measurement efforts, and their constituents are seeing great results. But don't be afraid of reporting the, you know, sort of plateau areas and then the negative effects as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah. John Mark, I know that we want to keep this episode a little bit shorter. We did have some really great questions come through in our webinar a couple of weeks ago that we might want to recap or highlight or dive into a little bit more here. Did you have maybe one or two questions that we want to talk through?
You know, I do. And thank you for the correction on the 78% versus the 88%. I appreciate that a lot.
Let's see.
I like this question. How should foundations, family foundations, private foundations, corporate foundations, how should they think about measuring the impact of their grantees? This is a very, very common question that we get because for some reason, people think that there's a disconnect. That impact is impact. And we can't collect impact data from our grantees for whatever reason. I don't think it needs to be very different. Now, is it hard? Of course it's hard. Everything, like, it's hard in the sense of you don't have direct measurement control of the organizations that you grant to unless you require it, which is perfectly appropriate for anyone who's wondering. It is perfectly appropriate for you to have impact expectations from your grantees. But Lauren, I'd love to hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah, that's a question that we see and hear often, whether it's webinars and people are asking that question or one-on-one conversations with various foundations. And it's a legitimate, you know, thought or concern that, well, there's this added layer of separation. As a foundation, we are granting money out, and oftentimes we don't, you know, we're not directly direct service providers or boots on the ground, if you will. However, not always, but oftentimes, there are many organizations that are direct service providers or, you know, directly conducting programs, and they have nearly as difficult a time measuring their impact. And so oftentimes, I view it very similarly as to why these impact measurement barriers persist, whether it's a foundation or a direct, you know, service providing nonprofit. And oftentimes, not always, but oftentimes it comes back to what systems, processes, existing operational efforts are or are not in place. That's not always the case, but oftentimes it is. And so there are some foundations that have relatively strict requirements on the front end with their application process, and then they require some quarterly, certainly most annually, require annual reporting from the organizations that they provide grants to, from their grantees. And so that is probably the simplest, most straightforward way, is get information on the front end through an application and ask, you know, our team could help you with this, or you can internally go through, what do we need to know on the front end, and also be able to compare in 6 months or 12 months. And so that would be my most straightforward, easiest piece of advice, is really making sure that these operational components are there. And I also hear, you know, some smaller foundations say, well, we don't give away very big grants, and so we don't feel like, you know, we can really hold people accountable to that reporting side. And I'm not saying that you have to, you know, give people a 45 question application and, you know, offboarding graduation report kind of thing. But you can absolutely hold them accountable to giving you certain metrics. So ideally, I would hope that most foundations know what the funds are going toward. There are a few out there that are no questions asked, you know, and, but overall, having a general understanding of what their programs look like, what the funds are going toward, then that should give you good insight on, you know, are you just asking for output reports, how many people served, number of, you know, supplies distributed. Ideally, you're asking them for outcomes, though. You're asking them and you're holding them accountable to outcome tracking. And, you know, I see no problem with that when you're providing funds to these organizations. So doing it in a reasonable way, but also not just saying, yeah, do whatever you'd like with our funds. And if it doesn't make a difference, that's okay. Because that's ultimately what's being said if you're not requiring some level of reporting back.
Yeah, I think that's a wonderful answer. And I think it's sort of, people feel uncomfortable, you know, asking, like, having expectations on this. And you know, if you think about it in any other type of just business context, it would be really inappropriate for an investor to not get an investor report, right?
Yeah.
If you go and raise money, you're raising money for venture capital, raise money for private equity, they're going to be deep in your operations, even from a bank, right? They're going to be deep in your operations. And I think it's important to consider how you can professionalize your grantor-grantee relationship. Mm-hmm. And so really, we're in an amazing time. It's 2025, almost 2026. It's a remarkable time for technology, and it has never been easier to measure the impact of your programs. That doesn't mean it's easy. It's never been easier, though. Lauren and I have been at this for a while. It's never been easier. Yeah. And so it's also, I really do mean professionalize. Like we sometimes just need to take the kid gloves off. We need to, you know, take the velvet gloves off. Like, this is a serious business of creating social change. And so we need to have expectations for that. Very rudimentary approaches would be dollar per output, dollar per outcome. I invested $15,000. You served 150 people. Great. I know what my dollar per output is. But now we want to get into the dollar per outcome perspective. And now we want to know, like, how are you measuring that? How reliable is the data? What does that look like? And we can still quantify that change because we're looking for impact efficiency. How efficient are you at creating these kinds of changes? And for the nonprofits that are listening to this, you do not need to put lipstick on your impact reports. And you just need to tell the truth, right? There are so many case studies that are out there of organizations that just told the truth, like, hey, we thought that we were going to get X dollar per outcome or X impact, and we didn't. We were way off. It was worse. But here's what we learned, and here's what we're going to do differently now. Funders are desperate to find innovative leaders that are learning and improving. So be an organization that is constantly learning, which means you need to be collecting data and interpreting that data and making changes and improving. Like, you don't want to just be this stagnant, oh, well, we're just going to keep doing the same thing we've always been doing. You can't afford to be that way, right? There's so much going on politically, so much going on economically, so much going on with technology. We always have to learn and adapt. That doesn't mean we have to, you know, restructure our organization every 6 months, but it does mean that we need to keep an eye on the metrics that matter most. And so for the grantors that are out there, would strongly encourage you to have just more professional expectations, and you can scale this up as you go. And for the nonprofits that are applying for grants, see this as your advantage to be a great learner, to be someone who is impact focused, and it's going to make you much more appealing to the grantors that are out there, because that's what they're looking for, just to be clear.
Yeah, I think that's great. Great insights, great advice, John Mark. I want to do one more question to kind of tie everything together. I know we've talked a lot about impact measurement, maybe a little bit more than we intended to. So if we're thinking about end of year, and several people over the last couple of weeks, I've heard say, I've had lots of one-on-one conversations. John Mark, you and I have both had lots of one-on-one conversations with great nonprofit leaders. Mm-hmm. And something that I've heard several people say is, I'm relatively new here, mm-hmm. and I've inherited this list. You know, to them, it's more of a marketing list. They're not even certain that all of these individuals have donated. And they're typically working with spreadsheets. They don't have a clear, clean CRM. Or maybe for those that do have a CRM, it's just not clear data, clear information on the donor side, mm-hmm. Or I should say marketing side. So they've inherited this list. They don't have clean points of contact. One might have an email. One might have a phone number. Others might have addresses. But ultimately, what I'm hearing is nonprofit leaders saying, I don't know how to communicate to them because I don't know if these are lapsed donors. I don't know if they've never given before. And so how would you say to someone, you know, that has a few weeks of the year left, here's how you can actively and effectively communicate your impact to a list that you're not sure what their relationship is with your organization?
Yeah. So you're flying completely blind, right? We have no idea, you know, giving history, no idea, anything like that. If that's the assumption, if you have phone numbers, that's where I'd start. I would make at least 100 phone calls per day. And I would try and go through and find some way to prioritize that list just based on if you have any type of giving history or email open rates, click rates, things like that from an engagement standpoint. And the tone would be gratitude and impact. It's the two main reasons why donors stop giving. They're never thanked for their gift, and they're never updated on the difference their gift created. I would lean strongly into that. And I would do the same thing that Lauren talked about at the beginning of this conversation. Still articulate the size of the problem that your organization exists to solve, but clearly explain how donors are making an active difference. And here's how the money is going to be used moving forward. I know there's a lot to unpack with each one of those things, but phone calls, emails, touch points, it is giving season, and you want to be the lady or the guy on the phone that is positive, encouraging, and moving forward to create real change and giving them an opportunity to be a part of it. That's what I would say.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And I think for those people that don't feel like they have time for phone calls, they don't have time to really, you know, investigate the list right now at end of year, taking a couple sentences, again, whether it's email or a mailer, to really remind people, this is who we are. This is what we're all about. That's not a problem whether someone is highly invested and knows about your mission or someone has completely forgotten who you are. A quick recap, a quick one-liner or tagline, you know, this is our organization. This is what we stand for. Helping them understand how past donor engagement, past volunteers, other stakeholders, the impact that they're helping you create, the change that is being created, not because your organization is so amazing, but because you have really strong partnerships, donors, so on and so forth. And then like John Mark said, a lot of gratitude. So even if you're not saying thank you for your past gifts, because you don't know if they've given before, but thank you for your interest. Thank you for being a part of our community. A lot of gratitude and appreciation for these individuals that can all be very strong for a variety of contact points. Again, whether they're marketing contacts, donor contacts, lapsed donors, active donors. So hopefully this has been a good, helpful recap. And it was a great conversation today.
I loved it, Lauren. Thanks so much for your time. Great conversation. It was an awesome webinar. And obviously we have more webinars coming your way and more podcasts. So check us out there. Check us out on YouTube and LinkedIn. We're here to help the nonprofit community thrive. So thank you so much.
Awesome. Thanks so much.
Take care.